Well, we're just for another couple of minutes. While we're just waiting here, do you think that teddy bears can make good karma? You think they might be reborn in the next life as a real bear? Sometimes people have the idea that only human beings can make karma. But there is a classic example of the elephant and the monkey who looked after the Buddha. It's one of my favorite little stories. There was the Buddha had an argument with the Sangha. And it's just, even these days, that the democratic idea of the Sangha means sometimes even the Buddha doesn't really get his voice heard. So the Buddha decided just to go off into the forest for 3 months. And when he went deep into the forest, for 3 months he was looked after by an elephant. And the elephant would find fruits for the Buddha and offer the fruits to the Buddha. And one day, and that's how the Buddha survived. And one day in roots as well, where the elephant would offer to the Buddha. And one day a monkey was sitting in the tree and watching the elephant give all these wonderful fruits to the Buddha. And somehow or other the monkey thought, this is a wonderful thing to do. So the monkey also wanted to offer something. So the monkey knew where there was a big beehive with lots of honey. He scared all the bees away, probably got stung himself, but got some honey from the hive, which he offered to the Buddha. And when the Buddha accepted that from the monkey was just so incredibly overjoyed. Now his happiness was just went up to stratospheric levels. And so did the monkey. He started swinging around in the trees, so elated that he lost his mindfulness and he missed a branch. And he came crashing down to the ground and died. Don't worry, because that was a wonderful thing. He died with so much happiness. He was reborn immediately in the Tawatingsa realm. Lots of happiness. Just one act of kindness, and he died when he was enjoying the happiness of it. And then the elephant kept on looking after the Buddha for the whole rains retreat. And at the end of that, the monks, they reconciled and they found the Buddha to ask him to come back to lead the community called the Sangha. And then the Buddha agreed, but that meant the elephant, who got very attached to the Buddha, just looking after the Buddha all by himself. So the Buddha saw the elephant was like, you know, like losing your most precious loved one. And then the Buddha told the elephant, there's about a few extra monks come. Make a big Sanghadana for all the monks who were here. And the elephant had to work so hard getting enough food, not just for the Buddha, but for all the other monks. And then the Buddha shared the blessings with the elephant and then went. And that elephant died of a broken heart. He had some Buddha all to himself for 3 months. But the elephant got reborn in the Tusita realm. That's one above the monkey. So there we are, that even animals can make good karma. So there's a wonderful little story, just how an elephant and a monkey, they were helping a little, helping the Buddha, and got so much merit, so much joy. They felt so happy, but they died and got reborn in heaven. So I thought it was a really nice little story. The elephant and the monkey. So anyway, and now we do the stories of deeper stuff. But you asked for it, so you're going to get it. So to Namo Tassa first of all. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So this is going back to the word of the Buddha, based on the Four Noble Truths, the last of which is the Eightfold Path. So the five components of existence, are we on the same page? Yes. And how in particular are the five components of existence suffering? They are as follows: the body, experience, literally is what is felt, vedana, perception, and perception is how we look at things. And I mentioned yesterday, that sometimes I like to go and see artworks, and you can see the really beautiful women 100 years ago, 200 years ago, were all chubby and fat. And these days, no guy would go out with them. So I always tell people, especially girls who are a little overweight, you were just born at the wrong time. And now it's thin models. And 100 years ago, they'd be sent to the doctor. They were sick. So it's perception, what we perceive is beautiful, and what we perceive is happiness. The will, the sankhara, and the other mental formations coming from that will, and consciousnesses. These are the five components of existence the Buddha says is a suffering. Notice called the Noble Truth of Suffering, and yesterday I wasn't really sharp enough at the question time because somebody asked me, is the clinging aggregates the same as the ordinary aggregates? And it's just quoted here. Is that fuel, it's upadanam as I mentioned, which is what you said was clinging, is that the same as these five components of existence, or is the fuel something apart from us, the five components of existence? It is that fuel, the upadana, the craving, the clinging, what we wish to call it, the attachment, that fuel is neither the same as the five components of existence, nor is the fuel separate from the five components of existence. It is the desire and wanting that is part of those five components of existence. So in this body and mind of ours, it's a desire and wanting. That is the fuel, and it's inside the five components of existence now, and it sustains these five components of existence. Is the fuel separate from the car? In fact, usually the fuel is part of the car. It's in the tank. So, here we go. Any kind of body whatsoever, whether past, future or present, one's own or others, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, that's called the body component of existence. And all bodies should be seen as they really are, with correct wisdom thus: this is not mine, this I am not, this is not a permanent essence. And that should be really clear. You're all old enough now. If you took a photograph of yourself just 50 years ago, if you're that old, and you put it next, well, let alone 50 years, 10 years ago, and you put it next to yourself now, and people would not be able to recognize it. No, is that you? Nah, come on. So, it's his body isn't ours. So, we make use of this body. It's like a car. And sometimes, you get a bang in the car, a dent in the car. As long as it can keep going down the road, it's good enough. And there are many advantages of having an old car. If you have an old car, you can park it on the street and no one will steal it. It's not worth anything. So the same as you. If you're an old... no one really wants you. So you're free. You don't have to worry about stuff. So it's not mine, this body of ours. And any kind of experience, whatever, whether past, future or present, all the experiences you've had in the past, and all the experience you may have in the future, all the experience you're having now, gross or subtle, one's own or others, in other words, just like you, mine, just like mine, everybody else's, inferior or superior, far or near, this is the experience component of existence. And all the experience should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom thus. This is not mine, this I am not. This is not a permanent essence. I remember the poem, I probably got it down here somewhere, by Robbie Burns. Like, especially the pleasurable experiences. Pleasures are like poppies spread. You pluck the flower, the bloom is shed. Because in a poppy flower, as soon as you take it out of the ground, the leaves, the petals fall off. Or like the snowfall in the river, white for a moment and then gone forever. That's what experience is like. It just passes so quickly. How long have you been here? Like yesterday you were here. And it's already a couple of days have gone. Before you know it, you're in a plane going back to Hong Kong or Indonesia. It goes so fast. That's what experience is. And perceptions is how you see things. Whether you see things as something that's really beautiful or something ugly, something healthy or sick, something which is desirable or something which is not desirable. You see, much of this is actually just conditioned, you know, by our society. Just say, like, you know, winning, being somebody who's famous, being somebody who's wealthy. Some people aspire towards that. That's what they want. And other people, once they get there, they just realize it's so empty. It is what we call unfaithful. It promises a lot, but once you get there, it doesn't live up to its promises. So this is perception, whatever perception, past, future or present, one's own or others, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near. This is the perception component of existence. And all perception should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom thus. It's not mine. This is I am not. This is not a permanent essence. And with the perception, the usual simile, I think it comes a bit later, it's like a mirage. And you see what's out there, but you know, sometimes it looks like it's a real body of water. But as you go close to it, it's just a trick of light. It's just perception. And so sometimes that, you know, can we really believe our perceptions? Even little things like perceptions of the past are especially interesting, because there was a policeman who have to report on car accidents, especially where there's been injuries or even fatalities. I remember them talking to me and they said they can interview eyewitnesses. And these are not crazy people, these are eyewitnesses. What happened? What did you see? And it's only a few minutes after the accident. And they report what they remember they saw. And simple things. Was it a red car or a yellow car? Was it a four-wheeler or a six-wheeler? And they often get it wrong. And they realize that what perception is, they've got like a kernel of truth, and we add on to that what we thought must have happened. Much of our perception, it interprets, and it's what we add on causes us all the arguments. It is one of the reasons for perception. I don't know, you know, who upset you, but sometimes if you go up to them and say, I never said that. They never said that, but that's what you heard them say. The two are different. What comes out of the mouth is one thing, and what goes into your ear is sometimes totally different. So be careful, that's perception. And any kind of will and other mental formations, whatever, whether past, future or present, one's own or others, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, this is the will and mental formations component of existence. And all will should be seen as they really are with correct wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not a permanent essence. You understand where this world comes from. It's not you. It's not some other being. It's just this process of cause and effect. So you can train the will by coming, associating with good people, with positive people, with kind people. If you hang around with those kind, good, positive people, you find your will becomes positive. And that was the story of, you know, the elephant who lost his happiness in the Good Bad Who Knows book. I was showing it to a few people. That was number 4 in the German bestseller list. And number 2 was the Bear Awareness book. And 7, still clinging on there, was the Good Bad Who Knows. No, it was the Open the Door of Your Heart. But that particular one, The Elephant Which Lost Its Happiness, that was the title they chose for the German edition. And that was the story of an elephant who went bad. A royal elephant. And the reason why it started doing very nasty, selfish acts. It used to be such a well-behaved elephant before. And it started turning sort of cranky. And so no one knew why. They thought it might be some sickness, it wasn't that, until eventually they found out there was some robbers, bandits, were meeting behind the elephant stall every evening to plan their attacks, you know, who they would beat up, who they would rob, who they would kill. They were bad people. And because they were just meeting behind the elephant stall at night time, even though elephant couldn't understand human language, could pick up on the vibes. And because it was picking up on the bad energy of the bandits, that's why the elephant became a bad elephant. And of course, once they knew the problem, had all the bandits arrested, and they had monks meditate behind the elephant stall every night, for a long time, and do chanting and discuss the Dhamma, and the energy changed. It was such nice energy, the elephant became a good elephant again. And this is what happens sometimes. It's this mental formations, our will, you know, where we're coming from. But if you hang around bad people for too long, then you do become bad. It's one of the reasons why there is something to be said, you know, for kids playing too much violent video games, getting violent. It's just the nature of the mind. Or, unfortunately, the kids go to school and they sort of can do something much more wholesome and more beautiful there. Little acts of kindness, goodness, seeing wonderful things, being with good people, that will make sort of the kids sort of balanced. It's also one of the reasons, as I often say, that sometimes people in their holidays, they want to go and stay in monasteries or temples. And they do that, they stay there, and because they're close to the monks or the nuns for a few weeks, or when they leave and go back to work, oh, they're just such peaceful, they pick up on all the good energy of the monks. We don't let too many lay people do that. Because otherwise, hanging around with the lay people for too long, then the monks will pick up on all your... It works both ways. So, and any kind of consciousnesses whatsoever, whether past, future or present, one's own or others, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, this is the consciousnesses component of existence, and all consciousnesses should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom. It's not mine. Sometimes that, you know, you say, oh, be, you know, be, somebody bangs the door. OK, Can you actually shut it off and not hear it, decide I'm not going to listen to that? No, because sometimes it just drags your attention. There's a big sound and you hear it. So it's out of control. Can you really decide if you have an alarm clock, oh, tomorrow morning I'm not going to listen to my alarm clock? It just calls you, it grabs your attention. You can't not listen to it. So this is the nature of consciousness. It's not yours, it's not who you are, and it's not a permanent essence. It comes and goes. So that is the one in brief. Now we go into a little bit more. This is how the Buddha describes them. What is the body component of existence? The four great elements and the physical qualities derived from the four great elements. There's the earth, water, fire, and air element. I go through that pretty quickly because that was one part of the Buddha's teachings which I always rebelled against because I was a theoretical physicist. There's no way you can say that is the nature of existence. If they say some quarks, a Higgs boson and muons and stuff like that, I say, okay, great. But what it is just saying it's just stuff, that's all. And however you wish to describe it, it's just stuff. And that's what your body is, it's just stuff. The experience component of existence, there are these, I don't know if you've ever seen autopsies. That's supposed to be one of the things which monks, forest monks, meditating monks, are supposed to have an opportunity to do. And of course, if you go to a place like Thailand and you're a monk, even in Sri Lanka, you can get the opportunity to see autopsies. And when you see an autopsy, you know, you see a body just like yours, and they open it all up and you can actually see what it is. And there's just nothing there. One of the first times I went to an autopsy, I couldn't believe how small the human brain is. And they take it out and you see it, it's just a tiny thing. But it causes you so much trouble. For me, it wasn't disgusting, it was like fascinating to see, you know, all these little organs and how they all fit into your body. And not really disgusting, but amazing to see. So anyway, it's just body, that's all. And there we go, the experience component of existence. There are three types of experience. The three are pleasant, to any of the six senses unpleasant, and neither unpleasant nor unpleasant, in between. Neutral, there are the three types of experience. And when you define it like that, you will discover that if it's a pleasant experience, that's only because what went before and what went after. If there's a lot of pain before, then the next moment is so pleasant. And if you have lots of pleasure and then it disappears, that's pain. You cannot have one without the other. And in fact, I've said and been quoted that pain is just a space between two moments of pleasure. And pleasure is just a space between two moments of pain. So, if you're on holiday, yay, on holiday! The amount you enjoy your holiday is dependent upon all the stress and pain of working hard, saving up the money, going through the customs and flying all over the place. And the disappointment of when you go back to work is dependent on if you had a very good time at holiday or not. It is always conditioned on what came before it. So I'm not sure about you that I was in hospital many years ago for about 5 or 6 days. They didn't know what was wrong with me. All right with me, I should have said, because nothing wrong with being sick. But when I left, I've never felt more healthy. But when you've recovered from a sickness, just because the contrast was there. So, this is how we notice that you can't have happiness without some pain. You can't have pain without happiness. So if you are very sick, disappointed, it cannot last. It's not just through experience, but theory, it cannot last. Because after a while, people with chronic pain, and you can put MRI scans on their brain and all the pain centers are lighting up, and why aren't you screaming? Because they've got used to it. It is the contrast causes the pain. If it gets better, yay! If it gets worse, ugh. It's how it changes. That's what causes the pain. It's a nice thing to know. If ever you're really, really sick in hospital and it's the medication is not taking the pain away, it will go by itself. Because after a while, the body just doesn't, basically, just like the sound of the aircon. Oh, it is on. Well, it's likely the fan of that thing then. Yeah. Fan. After a while, I won't be able to hear the sound of the fan. In the morning, if the aircon is on, you hear it, you feel it, but after a while, you're meditating, you don't notice it any longer. Because that's how our brain works. It only notices things which change, including pain. After a while, you don't feel it anymore. Anyway, that's the will. Our consciousness, the perception. Six kinds of perceptions, each according to the different sense bases, sight, sound, smells, taste, touches, and perception of mental objects. And it's been shown that sometimes there's an overlap there, especially between smell and taste. Because sometimes you think you're tasting just the curry, but actually you're smelling it. And if you have like a blocked nose, a cold or something, or some blockage of your sinuses, you say, oh, the curry just, you know, doesn't smell very nice. Or doesn't sort of taste nice. But it's actually that you're smelling it. You're tasting it, but you're not smelling it. Those two get really interfered with, a crossover. And anyway, touches, perceptions of mental objects. Those are the six types of perceptions. And on this perception, it's often we see what we're expecting to see. So if you're a senior monk, especially, you know, if you're a well-known meditation teacher, you can say anything. And as soon as you say something, oh, I don't understand that, but Ajahn Brahm said it must be wise. So you hear what you want to hear. And if, you know, some other little Jojo comes up, you know, just a lay person, and they can say something really properly deep. No, but say little Tim over the back there, one of our Anagarikas. He might say something that says something very, very wise. Oh, consciousness is the nature to cease. And so, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. He's only an Anagarika, therefore it can't be correct. Have you noticed that? Sometimes I say things and they're totally wrong. So, oh, Ajahn Brahm said that. I don't understand it. It's not what the Buddha said, but it must be something really deep there. Welcome to perception. There's someone you don't like, you know, they say, oh, you know, you go home and your husband said, oh, look, I really miss you. I'm sorry that I said that to you. And what do you do? Instead of saying, oh, isn't that nice? He's asked forgiveness. Somebody will say, what game is he trying to play? What does he want? I know he's done something wrong. The same word you can perceive in so many different ways according to what you expect. And the consciousness, the six types of consciousness is, oh, the will, oh yeah, will regarding sight, sounds, smells, tastes, touches, and mental objects. And consciousness is, what are the consciousnesses? There are these six kinds of consciousnesses. I put this down here because someone said, why do you call it consciousnesses and not consciousness? So what the Buddha said is that consciousness is sight consciousness, hearing consciousness, smell consciousness, taste consciousness, body consciousness, and mind consciousness. And some, many of you here when we did our, I think Muta, you were here when we did the global conference, with we had the cyborg on here. This is one gentleman from England, and he was colorblind. So, you know, he couldn't see reds and greens, which make it very difficult if you are driving a car through a traffic light. So, and many things, he said, caused a lot of problem for him. So I think he was a bit of a scientist. So he managed to, you know, volunteer for this experiment. They had like a camera in front of his face, and it took the, like small cameras like they have these days on computers. And that took a color image, and it transformed it into vibrations, physical vibrations. And it was fused into his skull, so that when he saw different colors, his brain would vibrate at different frequencies. And it took him about 6 months. His brain learned how to interpret, you know, those vibrations. And so he would see things in sound. So I remember one thing. I always remember the funny things. He was saying that because, you know, he was really unique, he was a real cyborg, he saw through sound, through a camera in front of his head. When he met Prince Charles, you know, his comment to Prince Charles was, "Oh, your face sounds very, very old," or something. And he was being absolutely honest to his experience, that the vibrations, you know, in his head, you know, saw an old face. He said, "You know, you sound old. Your face sounds old, not your speech." He saw things in a totally different way, which was fascinating to the idea of sense consciousnesses. And he could also see that it wasn't much for the experimenters to extend the range of visual spectrum which he could experience. So I think he could experience in the ultraviolet spectrum. I don't know about the infrared, but he said, "I can see just what some like bats see at night," which was really amazing. That's why we invited him up there, because it just made me understand a little bit more about the sense perception, especially of sight. And there was a fellow who was wired to see things totally different. And anyway, those are the components of existence, six consciousness components. And now we have what's called the dependent origination of consciousness. Now, where consciousness actually comes from. If the sense of knowing a mind is intact, so you've got a mind, but no mind objects come into its range, then there is no manifestation of mind consciousness. If the sense of knowing is intact and mind objects come into its range, there's something to know, but there's no engagement, then there's no manifestation of mind consciousness. But when the sense of knowing is intact, mind objects come into its range, and there is conscious engagement, then mind consciousness manifests. So what we call mind consciousness is only there when there's something to know, and we're interested in that knowing. Otherwise, people say, "Well, where does mind consciousness go when you're not, say, when you're under anesthesia? You know, when you're in the hospital bed and you are anesthetized, you're not aware anywhere. So, where does your consciousness go?" It doesn't go anywhere. It's not an essence which is always there. When the causes are there, it arises. When the causes stop, it stops. It doesn't go anywhere. It's just not there. Okay. And so for the other five senses and the origin Origination of their own type of consciousnesses. You need the sense base, something to know, an engagement. It's for some reason, you connect, and then the consciousness manifests. Consciousness is reckoned by the particular condition, depend upon which it arises. If consciousness arises dependent upon sight and visual objects, it's reckoned as sight consciousness. When consciousness arises dependent on hearing and sound, it is reckoned as hearing consciousness. Arises dependent upon smell and odors, it is smell consciousness. Taste and flavors, taste consciousness. Touch and tangibles, it is touch consciousness. Consciousness arises dependent upon the mind, and mind objects is reckoned as mind consciousness. And whatever there is of form, actually, oh, there's the other simile there about consciousness. It's the, it comes later on, but it fits in here, about the simile of the flame. And there was a flame on the top of an oil lamp. And the Buddha is talking to this man, Vajragota, and he said, see that flame on top of the oil lamp. That flame only is there because three things come together. The oil, which is the fuel, the wick, and the heat. When those three things come together, there's this thing we call flame. But when one of those three causes is taken away, for example, the oil is all used up, or the wick is exhausted, it's burnt up, or somebody blows the flame away, the heat away. Then, no heat or no oil or no wick, then the flame is extinguished. So then, later on, somebody comes and lights the wick again or gets a new wick. Where did the flame go in the meantime? Where does the consciousness go when you're under anesthetic? It doesn't go anywhere. It just stops. Okay. And so whatever there is of form, body, that belongs to the form component of existence. Whatever there is of experience, that belongs to the experience group of existence. Whatever there is of perception, that all belongs to the perception component of existence. Whatever there is of will and other formations, that belongs to the will component of existence. Whatever there is of consciousness is that belongs to consciousness's component of existence. So whatever there is of consciousness, that belongs to that component of existence. There's not a consciousness outside of the consciousness component of existence. This is why the Buddha was saying this. Whatsoever there is of consciousnesses, this belongs to the consciousness component of existence. It's inclusive. There's no exceptions. You can't say cosmic consciousness or universal consciousness or whatever consciousness. Whatever there is of consciousness, it all belongs to this consciousness component of existence. Impermanent. Not me, not mine. Not a permanent essence. You may not accept that, but that is what the Buddha said. Now, sometimes people say, Ajahn Sankara, the fourth of these components of existence, you keep calling it will, what's the justification? And this is Ajahn Bhamari, just kept on me about this. Well, this is perhaps the many places, but the most important place is just in the Samyutta Nikaya, that's S.N. Samyutta Nikaya. This is the Kanda Samyutta. What is the Sankara Kanda? The definition of Sankara is the six types of will. Will involved with the objects of the six senses. That's the very clearest definition where sankhara is defined as will. Your will. What drives you? What motivates you? What stops you being still? The will makes you move. That's why trying to stop moving by winning yourself to stop moving, it's just like dog chasing its tail. Go round and round and round and round. I am going to really be still. Come on, be still. You can't do it that way. It's just more will. When you say, let go of the will, then stillness happens. Dependency on consciousness. Though someone might say, apart from form, experience, perception, or from will, I will make knowing the coming and going of consciousnesses, that consciousness can exist without one of these other four. Disembodied, disexperienced, disperceived, diswilled, as if consciousness can be apart from these things. The Buddha said, no way. If you are conscious, you need something to be conscious of. If it's not form, it's an experience, it's a perception, it's will. So, just as two sheaves of reeds, using agricultural similes from that time, after I'm harvesting the rice, in order for the rice stalks to dry out, they would actually, you may have seen this, especially maybe not in Hong Kong, but you know, in Indonesia, go to the paddy fields, they take sheaves of reeds and they would lean them up against each other so the air can go in and out and around so they could dry out. And then they could be stored or given to the animals to eat or even used for straw building material. But if there was moisture in them, they would get moldy and they would rot. So they had to dry it out. And that's the way they would dry them up, by having two sheaves of reeds leaning against one another. So if one were, just as two sheaves of reeds might stand leaning against each other, so too with the objects of consciousness, nama-rupa. Sometimes they call it name and form. But if you get to the heart of that, it really means like objects of consciousness. Keep it simple. What you can be conscious of. So if with the objects of consciousness as a condition, consciousness comes to be. With consciousness as a condition, objects of consciousness come to be. If one were to remove one of those sheaves of reeds, the other would fall. So too, the cessation of consciousness is the objects of consciousness cease to exist. When there's nothing to be conscious of, consciousness ceases to exist. And later on, if you look and start getting into really deep meditation, that's what happens. The objects of consciousness get so still, they stop, and so consciousness starts to fade away, level by level by level. So you actually experience consciousness vanishing. Okay, how are we going here? Any questions or comments so far? Yes.
When we sleep, we are told that the sense consciousness, all the other factors will go to sleep as well. But what about the mind consciousness? I'm not sure if it's true. Because you said the five consciousnesses engage the mind consciousness.
Yeah.
So what happens during the sleep?
What happens during the sleep is, again, we just get the echoes of the five senses. It's called dreaming. A lot of times we are dreaming. I've seen even like dogs, they're wagging their tail and they're I don't know what dream they're having when they're fast asleep, but even dogs obviously dream. Cats probably do the same. It's human beings. So are you really totally unconscious? One of the reasons why that people, they started to do what they called lucid dreaming. It takes a little bit of a while, but you train yourself that when you are asleep, to remember your dreams. Which, you know, sounds cool at first, but it's a total waste of time. But it's an interesting thing to do sometimes. The lucid dreaming. So you are aware, but, you know, in a different level. It's, you know, very, very low level of awareness in your dreaming. And otherwise, your consciousness, sometimes people are such a deep sleep. I don't know if you've ever had children. People tell me, trying to wake up your children in the morning to actually to go to school. It is like they're under anesthetic. They will not respond to anything. So, but it just means that a lot of times, you know, they know what mummy is saying, but they just refuse to admit it, and they're just, you know, half in the torpor and just being stubborn. But sometimes people are unconscious, still alive. What happened to their mind consciousness? It just stopped. It's not there for a while. It comes back later. But anyway, so it's challenging your idea that consciousness is a smooth, uninterrupted process which is always there. Because if that was the case, then where does it go? It's not there at all. It comes and it goes, just like flames. So what was it? That was Elton John, apparently, that he wrote a song when Princess Diana's consciousness stopped in her body. The Candle in the Wind. Is that right? The Flame in the Wind? Candle in the Wind. Candle in the Wind. So, he didn't know how much a Buddhist he really was, Mr. John. The Candle in the Wind. Gone. But she just gets reincarnated. Do you know where she's been reincarnated? Would you like to know?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not telling you. So, all phenomena. Three characters of existence. All phenomena that arise from the cause don't persist. Because when the cause goes, because it's a cause, I mean, that cause means it's not always there. It's only cause. Once a cause goes, so does the effect. And because they come from a cause and they don't persist, that's why they're suffering. You can't depend upon them. Can you depend upon your husband? On your wife? Can you depend upon yourself? You come from a cause. So, you know, when the karmic conditions disappear, then it all goes wrong. And that's part of our life. Your health? Your well-being, prosperity? Comes from a cause. When the cause is gone, you can keep making positive causes, you know, positive attitude, you know, being healthy, laughing a lot is good for happiness, but it comes from a cause. So after a while, it's just, when it disappears, it's, you suffer the loss of someone you really loved and cared for, or your health, or there's so much suffering then. Okay, if you just want to get married, or if you want to have a dog or a cat, well, there come a time when that dog or a cat dies. You have to let them go. And if you do that at the beginning, knowing that they're only temporary friends, then you keep that in mind. It means when they go, oh, we had a wonderful time together. So many wonderful memories, a wonderful journey together. Thank you so much. We can let go with joy. And then the suffering is got less. And all phenomena without a permanent essence. So what do you think? Does your body or any body, does it persist or disintegrate? It disintegrates, venerable sir. Is what disintegrates, suffering or happiness? Suffering, venerable sir. You're all doing pretty well right now. The fact you could come here. But it's going to happen that, you know, some of us, you know, will spend some time in hospital beds, and not pleasant. But, you know, we can always make it much more pleasant when we don't fight. When you're in that hospital bed, please remember the Emperor's Three Questions meditation. Now is the only time you ever have. Worrying about what's coming next, that will cause you a lot of pain. And just whatever it is you're experiencing now is important, so just care for it. And you find you have your time in hospital, especially your last hours, much more peacefully when you don't fight, when you flow. And especially when you don't start thinking, oh, why me? And it was recorded. A 91-year-old woman in the United States, that she was healthy, hardly had a day's illness in her whole life. And at 91 years of age, having her annual medical, the doctor said she had cancer. And she came out of the hospital so distraught, saying, why me? My goodness, you've got away with it for 91 years, and now you complain? It's your turn. So anyway, so all phenomena, if you catch an all phenomena, what do you think? Your body persists or disintegrates. Is what is disintegrating suffering or happiness? It's pretty much suffering. Is what is suffering disintegrates and subject to change, fit to regard it thus? This is mine, this I am, this is my permanent essence? No, Venerable Sir. That's why they have the problem in, like, many religions believe in reincarnation. In Christianity, they only have one reincarnation. So when you die, you go to heaven. So, when you die, you go to heaven. What body do you get when you go to heaven? You can choose whichever one. You're the young one or the old one. Whichever one you want. So imagine that, because it's one of the reasons why, I don't agree with this at all, but they thought, my goodness, what happens? Is, you know, can your cat go to heaven? What about people who have pet mice? Do the mice go to heaven too? Imagine, it might be heaven for the cat, having all the mice around to chase and eat, but it won't be much of a heaven for the mice. What about all your exes? Are they going to be in heaven too? So it makes life very difficult when you think like that. So anyway, just that doesn't happen. Anyway, what about babies who die? Or young kids? Are they stuck like that forever? Now, a 1 or 2 year old kid has to be in heaven? Can never express himself or herself? Always has to wear nappies for eternity. Anyway, I'm sure that somebody's got answers to those things, but it doesn't make much sense to me. So anyway, does experience persist or disappear? Does perception persist or change? Does will stay the same or come and go and alter? Are consciousnesses constant or changing? Always changing, Venerable Sir. What is always changing, suffering or happiness, suffering, Venerable Sirs? What is then consistent, suffering and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is the permanent essence, no, Venerable Sir. So little by little, some of these things which a lot of people celebrate, when we look at these things, and you know, is this really worth celebrating, experiencing, perceiving? When it's all we have, it's all we know, of course we make the best of it. Even in prison, if you've been born in prison, lived all your life in prison, know nothing except prison, of course you make the best of it. But when someone says prison is suffering, say, oh, come on, get a life. But then sometimes people show you just what's beyond the prison. And that's what you're going to find when you get some deep meditation. You're out of prison for a little while. It's totally different when, first of all, the five sense consciousnesses go. They're not there anymore. And such freedom. not having to feel cold, hot, itches, coughs, aches, pains, hunger, all that is just gone. This constant demand of your body. Or the sights, you've seen lovely things here, beautiful things, unpleasant things. It just, you can't control this. But when it all disappears, it's like freedom. Anyway, well, the Anatta doctrine, this is the Buddha just giving some nice similes. Suppose that this river Ganges was carrying along a great lump of foam. A person with good sight would inspect and carefully investigate it, and it would appear to them to be void, hollow, and empty. For what solidity could one find in a mere lump of foam? So too, whatever kind of form, body there is, past, future, or present, one's own or others, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, you inspect and carefully investigate it, and would appear to you to be void, empty, insubstantial. For what solidity could there be in foam? In form. So just looking at the insubstantiality of stuff. And any physicist here, that is just so true. This solid floor underneath the bamboo is concrete. Underneath the concrete is really compressed sand, and under there is gravel, under that is granite. So, but really there's more holes in that than there is stuff. The space between the molecules of cellulose which make up the bamboo is far greater than the molecules there. And you look at the molecule, the atoms, 99.999999, I think it's 28 nines is nothing. And just one tiny bit of stuff called an atom. And if you look like an atom, the nucleus is just one atom, is 99.999999% emptiness. Just this tiny little thing in the middle called the atom. And interesting, I'm just going off on a tangent, but this is an important tangent. An atom was a Greek word which was supposed to be the indivisible, permanent part which makes nature up, the atom. It wasn't supposed to be able to be split up. In Sanskrit Pali, atma. Those two words are connected linguistically. The atma, indivisible, permanent essence of a human being. Just like an atom makes up stuff, atma makes up minds, consciousnesses, beings. And even before Rutherford split up the atom, and so it was not, it's impermanent, it's split up, it's not essential. It's not, you can split it up. But many years before Rutherford, Professor Siddhartha Gautama in India split the atma and realized even this so-called indivisible thing which makes up the human being is divisible, is permanent, comes and goes. That's the atma and the atma and atom. Anyway, before I get split up. Okay, yeah. So that's the foam. So whatever kind of form, past, future, present, owns or others, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, you inspect and carefully investigate it, it would appear to you be void, empty, insubstantial, for what solidity could there be in form? Suppose it were raining, and big raindrops were falling, just like yesterday. A water bubble arises and bursts on the surface of the water. Plop! And a person with good sight would inspect and carefully investigate it. It would appear to them to be void, hollow, and momentary. For what permanence could there be in a water bottle? Plop! So too, whatever kind of experience there is, past, future, or present, one's own or others, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, you inspect and carefully investigate it. It would appear to be void, empty, momentary. can anything constant be found in experience? Just plop, and it's gone. Suppose in the last month of the hot season, around noon, a shimmering mirage appears, and a person with good sight would inspect and carefully investigate it, and would appear to them to be void, hollow, and illusory. For what reality could there be in a mirage? There is some reality there. It is real light. But you're giving it a meaning it doesn't deserve. You're misperceiving it. Just like when you fall in love. You fall in love. And if you're a guy, oh, she's the most beautiful person in the world. Oh, I'm so lucky to have met someone like that. And usually a few years later, when you see your divorce lawyer, why did I marry? It is the same person. But you're seeing it in a different way. In the first, you're seeing what you want to see, because romance, love. You're looking for your partner in life. And when you're really upset, you actually can't see any good qualities. You see the bad qualities in them. It's one of the reasons why, you know that lovely little technique, if you really get upset and angry at somebody else, or you feel bad about yourself, write on a piece of paper your name at the top, Ajahn Brahm. You know, I would do this with my name. And I'd line down the center, all the things which you don't like about yourself on the left side. Tell bad jokes, fat, whatever else you put there. All the things. But then once you fill the left-hand side, the things you don't like, the other side, all the things you do like about yourself. Oh, yeah, you know, just, you know, started many monasteries, and I've got bhikkhuni ordination going. And I've got made some really, really lovely monks and lovely nuns. And just helped out in Hong Kong and Ahipasiko. All those wonderful books, the Cha Ching books there. Then you put all the wonderful things. And then you look at one side. Which one is the correct one? If you're negative, you'd always look at the faults. If you feel really happy with yourself, you look at the right side. Which one is the right you? Neither, it's just perceptions. So it's a mirage, is you see what you want to see, what you expect to see. Do you want the mirage joke? Yeah, let's do the mirage joke. Some of you know this one. There was a fellow, and he was in the desert. And he'd been in the desert, no food, no water, the hot sun beating down on him. And soon he couldn't stand up anymore. He was crawling along on the sand dunes. Crawling, thinking that this would be his last few hours of life. The sun was beating down. He was dehydrated. He was hallucinating, he thought. Crawling, and in the distance, he saw something shimmering on the horizon. And he thought, oh, it's a mirage. And as he was crawling, the thing shimmering in the distance, it actually was more solid than he thought. And it looked like there was some vehicle coming towards him. And he thought, no, this must be heat stroke. Not just mirage, hallucinating. And as it came closer, he looked at it and his perception, he said, this is crazy. Because what he saw was a dog sled with an Eskimo, an Inuit in furs, driving the dog sled, you know, cracking the whip. And he said, I'm really gone mad. Seeing a dog sled with an Eskimo in furs in the middle of the desert. But as it came closer, he could hear the barking of the husky dogs. Woof, 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 woof. And he said, am I hallucinating? And then as it came closer, he realized this was not a mirage, it was an hallucination. Because the dog started licking him. He could feel their tongues. And he realized this was a miracle. He was saved. And as the Inuit gave him a drink, you know, from his water bottle. The man said, oh, I thought I was done. I thought I was dead. I've been lost in this desert for days. And the Eskimo said, and you think you're lost? Okay, I think we should finish there on a high note. We'll come back to the other similes tomorrow. Okay, so it's 4 o'clock. Okay.
Like that teddy bear? One, two. Oh, that's as good as I was.